Welcome to the Sharks MTG podcast, a South African Magic the Gathering podcast with a bit of competitive focus. My name is Bob Perfect, and joining me as always is Karan Chetty. How's it going, Karan?
Hey, Bob. I'm all right. Thanks, man. How are you?
Living under a quarantine field here. You know, someone played that enchantment from back in Oath of Gatewatch there, and now I'm stuck here until someone plays some removal on it.
Well, at least you're not alone. Well, you are alone, but you know what I mean. You're not alone in this endeavor.
That's the thing. We're all together and being alone. It's a really strange time.
Yeah, and I chose really poor timing, in fact, because I had my flights back from Bangkok booked ages ago. And it just so happened that it was coincided with the lockdowns. I got back last week Thursday, just in time to be, isolated, I guess. Yeah.
Well, have you been spending your time? Have you been playing a lot of Magic or nah?
No, not at all. Almost nothing, in fact. In the last few weeks, quite a few things have changed, sort of on the personal side of things. So I've come back to Joburg indefinitely. So that was a bit of a mission, packing up my life on that side of the world. So yeah, I've been a bit distracted. And of course, then you factor in the whole lockdown situation and everything that's going on. It just hasn't been a fun time, you know? I haven't been in the right frame of mind to play Magic, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, just not for the same reasons. Yeah. Like, the only Magic I've really played lately has been in this EGG 7 tournament. Like, I played a few matches over the weekend to test for it, and then the only Magic I've played this week has been in the actual tournament. That's it. So I'm not even playing warm-up matches and stuff like that. And it's just because, yeah, like, it feels like Magic isn't the distraction I need right now. Like, you know, because it's something I personally, like, when I play the game, like, I get too caught up in it. Like, I take it too seriously. So, like, if I'm not playing well, then I feel bad. And then, like, if I don't play a lot, I'm obviously not going to play well. So if I play a couple games, I lose. And then I'm just like, oh, this sucks. And then I don't want to play anymore. So I've had a very strange relationship with the game for the last few months.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you're saying is quite true. You know, like, unless you completely casual and want to play a bit of EDH or whatever, you know, whatever casual formats at home, Magic requires a lot of work just to be semi-competent, to be perfectly honest. It's a really difficult game. I mean, that's part of the reason why I guess it's kept us going for such a long time.
Yeah, to even just get to 50% win rates is like, it's a task. Like, you know, it takes constant work.
Yeah, so, well, it's true. Like, you know, depending on your competition and so forth. It's quite ironic because, you know, at this moment in time, your avenues for online Magic and the options available are fantastic. You know, there's this whole online Grand Prix that's happening through Arena. And on the MTGO side of things, they've got this whole super qualifier, basically PTQs that are firing all the time. So there's so many good things available if you sort of switch on at the moment. But, you know, it's just a waste of time and frankly money, in fact, if you're not focused. And that's kind of how I feel. So yeah. I just didn't even bother playing anything, you know. Just what's the point of playing those tournaments when you know you're not going to play well, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like if you show up to, like, let's say you're, like, back in school and you show up to your sports day and you, like, you haven't done, like, any of the 100-meter, like, run, like, you know, races before or anything like that, and now you're suddenly in the finals. Like, you're not going to have a good time in that situation because you just haven't prepped for it. And putting in that prep takes time, and it's something that used to, I think, a lot easier because the game didn't move as fast, so you could, you know, show up on one Saturday and then 2 weeks later show up with the same deck and, you know, still be fine. Like, you know, no one else was playing tons of Magic in between. Like, maybe you played a couple games with friends and stuff like that, Now it's just the competition is unreal. Like the level that some people are playing this game at, the amount that some people are playing this game, like if you look at streamers and that, the just being able to keep up with the Joneses is becoming, you know, it is just a constant rat race, and it's a constant finding the right deck for each tournament. It's weird, like playing Magic at the moment has become more of like a full-time job, and it's available to less people, like if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, ultimately, you know, it's objectives, right? Like, what do you want to get out of it? And if your objective is, well, I want to compete in the PDQs on MTGO, and I want to win the or you know do well in the ground online Grand Prix, then yeah, sure. Then it does be it's a lot of work. You know, regardless of how good one is or what one's level is. So yeah, I guess it's just weird timing, and it's just so ironic because like just about any other point in the last few, I don't know how many years, going back a few years, I would
If
have
this
been
had
delighted.
happened,
Yeah,
you would be.
I'd be delighted like 2 months ago, 3 months ago, a year ago, whatever, you know. Yeah, it's just a funny time we find ourselves in, and like to your point around how the metagame is evolving and how things change, it's crazy. I mean, standard. You know, even though I haven't been playing, I keep abreast of results and that sort of thing. But the standard format is so wide open; it's ridiculous. It really is. There's so many viable decks in standard, and
Yeah, like the other day we were on this podcast, you know, chatting to who was in the standard seats. It was Darren Hay, and he was
yeah.
playing the he was just like, yeah, this deck is hands down the best deck at the moment, when he was talking about Team of Clover. And now like Team of Clover is just a deck, like it's just there, like it's one of the decks that you can do well with.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just again because you know metagames, the metagame has evolved subsequently, and it's weird because it's evolving, and there are as I at the same time I say there are many options. Those options tend to be limited to the mid-range sphere, and you know decks tend to it's this arms race of everyone trying to go bigger than each other at the moment, which is
Yeah, we
I guess
are
the
in
fun.
mid-range hell.
Yeah, which I think is generally quite can be quite fun. So I quite generally enjoy that style of magic, but I
Mean,
think
the collective company format was like the last time we were in like a mid-rangey format that I thought was really good. I can't remember, like Dragons of Tarkir and stuff.
yeah, the end of the energy cycle was great. I mean, you know,
Oh
after all
yes,
the
that
bannings,
was, yeah, I enjoyed that.
the mirrors were tremendous. I mean, it might have been. The deck might have been too good, but the mirrors were just absolutely fantastic to play. But yeah, it's a bit different, and it has again to do with you know in inverted commas I guess fast mana, because you know with all these decks, all these mid-range decks tend to be green decks, whether it's Bant, Sultai, Simic, whatever you know, Timur, Reclamation, all of them are these green-based ramp decks, and so what happens is. Quite frankly, if you're on the play and you Growth Spiral on turn two and your opponent doesn't, it's incredibly difficult for your opponent to catch up.
Yeah.
You just have such a huge advantage
I've
because before
started
you know it.
Mystical Disputing growth spirals. Like depending on like the match, like depending on my deck and stuff like that, sometimes it's just worth it to stop them, like you know, from getting to that turn four Nissa, from getting like ahead, like because they can run away so quickly if you go, oh, I'm gonna wait to counter the next thing, and then you're screwed. You know, they play like a green spell, like, so you can't counter it. Then the Nissa comes down. It gets out of hand very, very quickly.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I guess it's not just that there's big mana, but the top end of the big mana decks are incredibly difficult, incredibly powerful, incredibly difficult to catch up with. Whether it's Nissa, Hydra Krasis, Uro, Cavalier Thorns, it's just incredibly powerful tools. These incredibly powerful rares and mythics that come at you, and it's very difficult to play. Play from behind in that space.
Yeah, I've found this format over the last few months, like since essentially Throne of Eldraine has been more of a runaway format. Like, there's been more games where it's just like you start steamrolling someone, you know, like the advantages get, like you gather your advantages quite quickly. And yeah, it's very much a haymakers decide everything at the end kind of situation, which I don't know. Is that the kind of Magic you enjoy playing, or is that one of the reasons why you haven't been playing Magic as well?
No. To be perfectly honest, I think it's less to do. I mean, and maybe if I was in a right frame of mind and space, I'd enjoy it. I just think it's difficult. It creates restrictions. And it's also difficult to punish the decks. And you know, usually those decks, when they get too greedy, your aggro decks are there to, you know, clean them up.
But, exactly, and they flood out. You know, being able, like, the thing with ramp decks is like sometimes they don't draw their bombs. You know, sometimes it is all mana and like just cards that fetch lands and actual mana. But now, like with cards like Nissa and Uro and stuff like that, you're not only ramping, you're ramping and providing threats. It's definitely a strange time.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And another interesting observation is that I don't think that there's ever been a standard format where people have played this many lands. I'm seeing 28 to 30 lands in mid-range decks. Pretty standard.
Without Golos. Like, yeah, Golos made sense, but yo, this is insane.
Yeah, but the reason again is that it's twofold, right? Like, number one, you've got typically a blue-green base decks are playing Growth Spiral and Uro, so you really want to hit that second land to put into play. That's number one. Number two is if you're playing in those mirrors and you miss that land drop to cast, you know, when you get to five mana to cast Nissa or Cavalier, the game's probably over, you know, because your opponent's gonna play his fifth land and then slam the bomb down. So it's twofold. It's I think it serves to function, to service those Growth Spiral Uro effects. And the second is to make sure that you keep pace and you don't never miss that land drop, because you know, in the old days, and I think one of our previous podcasts, I spoke about how people just generally play too few lands. And I guess this is the evolution, and people are generally getting smarter about it and making sure that they're not getting caught out, which is pretty cool, I think.
Well, that actually kind of used to be, like, I know for myself, like, a strategy was to think of how few lands can I play in this deck, you know? What is the least amount of lands I can get in here and mathematically still be correct? And I guess, yeah, like, when your spells are more powerful, because, I mean, back in the day, when you're trying to play a wild mongrel, you know, like, you're not really too stressed about it. But nowadays, when you are trying to play these haymaker mythics, like, you do want to get to your 6th, 7th, 8th land drop, where I think Magic back in the day, 6 lands was where you kind of topped out. Am I wrong there? Or, like,
I don't think you are. I really don't think you are. It's an evolution, man. It really is. And, I mean, even just the threat density and the way Magic has changed, and, you know, now you've got increased land counts, you've got more expensive top ends, to your point. I mean, I'm just thinking about a deck I played in Onslaught that just came back to me now. I played a blue-black control deck with Undead Gladiator as the win condition.
Remember that.
Remember, like, one Visara the Dreadful and, like, three Undead Gladiators as my win condition. Like, that was it. Like, you know, and here people are playing multiple 5-6 drops, X spells, and no problem. It's just Magic has changed, I guess. And it's, you know... That's fine, but I think the counterpoint to it and what we touched on just now was, you know, usually your aggro decks are there to keep these decks in check, but, you know, aggro decks are being suppressed because... Well,
Mono Red has popped up every now and again. Like, it does take down a tournament. It does seem to, like, you know, make a showing, but it then, you know, just gets stomped back down the next week, essentially.
Yeah, and essentially it comes down to how prepared these decks are, because it's all good and well trying to curve out with your mono red deck, but, you know, the bad deck still has Wrath of God, or, you know, the new Wrath of God in it.
Yeah.
In its main board. All these blue-green decks have a ton of life gain between Uro and Hydra Krasis, just organically sort of built into them. They've got a way to combat you. And, you know, you spend your early turns playing little dorky one drops and two drops, and they just ramp up into, you know, they can ramp up into something really silly, you know, whether it's a Cavalier or a Hydra Krasis in no time and shut you out.
How does Mono Red beat a Cavalier of Thorns?
With great difficulty. You have to hope that you have Embercleave. Exactly. And they don't have Teferi in play. That's the other thing. Teferi is also just such a tempo loss, you know. You tap out for your annex, your opponent taps out for Teferi, bounce the annex, go. Now you have to still attack the Teferi if you hope to use your Embercleave. So it really creates this tricky tension point.
Yeah, you're describing exactly why, like, I've spent the entire of the standard that Teferi's been legal playing Teferi. Like, the big Teferi, I didn't play that much. Teferi, I've played 2 years. Like, straight up, that has probably been my most played card. Because what it does is completely changes the dynamic of the game. It completely changes how your opponent can play. And to me, getting my opponent's Teferi off the board or just not letting it hit is the biggest, like, most crucial play you can often make in, you know, current standard. Making sure that your opponent doesn't get a Teferi on the board. For myself, maybe I'm just a little paranoid, but I've lost so many games just from my opponent playing Teferi. Like, that's it. Like, you're so far behind in terms of, A, they bounce your threats, and B, now you can't respond to anything in their turn. Plus, they can now wrath you in your turn, which changes dynamics a lot as well.
Yeah, that's also, yeah. And again, so it makes it really tricky for the aggro decks to play around. And so, yeah, I think there's lots of reasons why, you know, all these cards that we're discussing, whether it's Teferi, Uro, Hydra Krasis, etc., they're big drawbacks to playing aggro. You know, it makes it really difficult for you. And similarly, I mean, that's why the only aggro deck that you see popping up from time to time is mono red. And occasionally, like now, I've seen the black red sacrifice style decks
starting to
appear, and they're taking on more of an aggro slant to them.
Okay, because I was gonna say I've seen those, but they seem very mid range. Like the ones that discard a lot of cards from you and stuff like that. I've seen them mostly mid-range, or maybe because I'm playing mid-range decks, it just gets to the mid-range. Maybe it's meant to be a bit quicker. I don't know.
Yeah, but like that's the thing. So you're talking about two aggro decks, right? Like, okay, let's say we classify black-red as aggro, but there is a fine line. It is bordering on. It has a lot of mid-range elements to it as well, but it can be quite aggressive. So in an entire format where, you know, you could probably play 12, 15 different like viable decks, you have two aggressive decks as options. And I guess that highlights where we are. We're in this land, you know, the land of the arms race. And again, because you've got these great cards that allow you to go long, but also like you play these, you know, two mana, 2/2 or whatever the case is, you know, that's a decent little threat. And your opponent just ramps into a Cavalier really early. I mean, or, you know, a turn 4 Dream Trawler. You know, you have to ask yourself, why am I playing a 2-mana 2/2 and I could play, you know, on 2 turns later, play a Dream Trawler, for example, you know. So these are the kind of things that I think are pushing aggro decks away. And it's almost as if you need sort of aggressive creatures that also have like some kind of cool ability that to make aggro better again. You know, you almost need 2-mana mythics. You know what I'm trying to say? Cards that don't exist.
But then the arms race gets even worse, you know? Like, if you start printing Ravenous Chupacabra, that's like 2-mana. Like, you know, things are just going to get out of hand. Like, but that is what's going to happen, like, continually. Like, cards are just going to keep getting better. They've pushed it so far now that, like, this game is, like, heading in Yu-Gi-Oh-ish directions, like in terms of, look, I mean, I say that having never played Yu-Gi-Oh, but understanding what a lot of people have said about it in the past. And I think Wizards just wants that. They want Magic to be about big, powerful, dumb stuff. Like, just from their, what's it called? Fire is their new thing. Their new, I think that's what it's called. Just, about maximizing the fun and replayability and everything like that. And I think stuff like, mana being more consistent and cards that, like Growth Spiral existing, or maybe because of the issues that Magic has had before, or some of the criticisms Magic has had before when it comes to stuff like that, not being able to play your fun cards because you can't get to the mana because, your opponent's playing a quick deck with like some Stone Rains on it. So you're trying to, get to your six mana spell and you're never even getting to your sixth land. And now the focus maybe has shifted from pure strategy, like, because back in the day, I think a lot of the game was about just trying to be strategically as clean as possible. And now that's there as well, but the spells you're using to do that are a lot more powerful. So it changes the way, it just changes the whole dynamics of everything.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about like mana bases and how things are. I mean, I played today, in fact, I played a round of this egg tournament. And I think in one of the games, my opponent took 6 to 8 damage off his shock lands. And I was playing mono red and he still beat me because he just kept on, Uro, Uro, Hydrokrasis, Hydrokrasis. And I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of crazy. Like, the reason I'm playing this deck is because of all these shock lands and, I'm meant to have a
Well,
chance, but yeah.
that was literally your reasoning. Like, we chatted about it before this tournament, discussing like the different decks we were going to play and stuff. And you're like, mono red seems like a good call when, people are going to be taking six damage to shocks. And neither of us really thought about the fact that, yeah, but they're just going to get that life back. So.
Quite. Yeah, so I thought it was quite funny. It was quite ironic at the time, but yeah, that's where we are.
That's where we are. So how is this egg tournament going for you?
Not particularly well at the moment. I'm 6 rounds in, and I'm 4-2, I think.
That's not too bad. You can still make it through to the next round if you win out.
Yeah, I'll have to just plug away. But yeah, it's been fine. Mono red's been fine. I feel like I haven't been drawing Embercleave a lot, which is kind of a problem when you're playing mono red. But yeah, it's still plugging away. How about you?
Pretty good. I'm 3-1 at the moment. Got two games to play tonight, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, like I've actually really been enjoying the deck. I've been playing this blue white blink deck. I saw it did well recently in a tournament. I was on MTG Top 8, and yeah, I picked it up and I've won most of the matches I've played with it, like both in testing and in the tournament. So I'm quite stoked about that because we were having a interesting weekend, like trying to figure out what decks to play with not a lot of time and like very little practice. So we were going over just the different options that we could try. Like you suggested that Teemer Flash deck that you saw pop up, and I tried it out and I was like, nah, this deck just isn't working for me. And that was actually one of the decks where the mana base I think hurt it a lot because I was struggling to sequence stuff correctly to be able to play spells in the correct order. But whereas the ramp decks don't necessarily have that problem.
I see. Well, oh yeah,
Oh, wait, what were some
and
of the other
this
options? What were some of the other options besides mono red?
well, blue green, God, what's the card called? The artifact that copies things.
The clover.
Clover, blue green clover, the Kai's creation. Because I played it last month and it was fun. It's a fun deck. I thought about that. I thought about straight blue green like Simic ramp, because just to go harder and ramp harder and go over the top with things like the 3 mana elemental. So I thought that could have something I considered. And I briefly considered Sultai as well. But this was all just theory. I hadn't really played with any of those decks apart from blue green clover last month. And I played again last month. I played with mono red, so I just decided, ah, let me just pick up mono red, because
You know how to play. You've been playing Mono Reds for as long as I've known you. Like, literally, since day one of me knowing you, like, I think you were playing Mono Red. So, you
Yeah,
know.
the style of Magic, it's there. It's it's pretty straightforward. The only difference is you don't finish people off with burn these days. You finish them off with Embercleave or Torbran. It's pretty
And
much the same.
that I think is actually to your disadvantage at the moment. I think that's causing a lot of the issues that Mono Red might face because you don't have that extra reach. So if your opponent can gum up the board, if your opponent can counteract a few of your things, if your opponent can interact with your creature when you play the Embercleave, like you're not getting in that extra, points of damage that you used to. I think that's helped me a lot, even with this blue-white deck that I'm playing at the moment. The three toughness on creatures is almost unbeatable for a mono red deck, and it should never be that way.
Yeah,
Wow.
that's an interesting point. Look, it's different. I agree with you that it does cause some problems, but at the same time, I had an opponent today with a Dream Trawler out and a big Hydra Krasis, and I attacked him for 20 odd with a Annex equipped with Embercleave, And there's like, if I had the burn style deck, there's probably no way in hell that I would have, ever got beat him with in that particular game. So there's pros and cons to it. But like the annex into Embercleave is just the most, provided it's not disrupted, the most
Yeah, it's
ridiculous,
disgusting.
yeah. So yeah, it's just different. And again, that's fine. I think it's good. It's good to have like an evolution and different styles and different takes on an archetype,
Oh yeah, you definitely don't want to be playing the same mono red deck, and like that's what like I at least enjoy about mono red and modern and pioneer and stuff is like there's different versions. There's the prowess versions, there's the more burnout versions, there's different kinds of styles, so it's not always the same gameplay, especially when you're playing against it. And that's maybe the thing like I haven't enjoyed about mono red lately is that like there's no variation. I know exactly what my opponent's going to be playing pretty much. Like at least currently, like I don't really have to stress about anything surprising popping up.
In a sense, this mono red deck is almost like a white weenie deck.
It is a
If
one.
you think
Like a white weenie deck. It's 100% a white weenie deck.
Yeah, just a bunch of
Everything it
little
does,
guys.
pumping creatures. Yeah, like even like Runaway Steamkin in its own way is a wild card. Like it's strange because of the way it adds counters, provides the value from you, like pump, like playing more of the same thing, which is what white does. Like white's meant to do the things red is doing at the moment.
Sure, and even like Annex, with that ability of creatures
Yeah,
dying and you getting tokens, that ability's been in white on white creatures many times over the years. So yeah, it's got that kind of, it's a weird place. It's just that the white weenie creatures, some of them have haste and deal damage, deal pings and whatever when they attack. So yeah, it's kind of funny. It's a
Yeah,
funny thought.
current white weenie just isn't really there. And like I tried it out early on in the format just because I like Heliod as a card. I think there's a lot of potential there in general, especially with that queen, the one that whenever you attack with a creature, you gain one life. Like that's just nice little wombo combo. But I found that was too disruptible, essentially. So maybe White Weenie will pop back up over the next few months. I doubt it though, because we're heading into Ikoria, which, if you thought we were in mid-range hell, I think we're no longer gonna be in mid-range hell. We're just gonna be in like end game hell, like come Ikoria.
I don't know. Well, who knows, man? You never know how these things flesh out. Maybe aggro decks will get a new lease on life, and maybe traditional control decks.
Yeah.
Remember, it wasn't too long ago that blue
Blue
white
white
control
control.
was the best deck in standard. When Paulo won the world championship with it. So yeah, maybe pure control can find a way to combat these go over the top mid range decks. That's also something that seems to be absent at the moment,
But don't you think
from.
control's biggest Yeah, don't you think control's biggest issue at the moment is the diversity of decks, though? Because you've got to account for so many different mid-range strategies. It's not just I've got to account for like this aggro strategy, these two mid-range strategies, and the other control strategy or whatever. It's now like well, shit, which of the mid-range decks am I actually going to try target here? Like, and that even minimizes your slots even more than you normally would, you know, like, especially for sideboarding, because sideboarding, you usually go like, cool, these are for the aggro decks, even though you're typically targeting one or two specific ones. Same thing with like mid-range stuff, same thing with control. So having such a diverse range of threats to have to deal with makes control a much harder option to pick up.
Absolutely. That's part of it. That's a big part of it. But I also think that it's difficult to deal with the card advantage provided by a lot of these decks. So, you know, things like Hydra Crisis and Uro, again, from the blue-green decks, you know, yeah. Cool, you know, you can't counter his 8-8 or the opponent's 8-8 Hydra Crisis, but they've still drawn four cards, or, you know, you want to counter Uro, great, it's going to come back again. So I think there's those kind of problems that it faces, is that the diversity or the power, the card advantage attached to a lot of these threats is difficult for the control decks to keep up with, in a sense.
Yeah, I don't even care when you're Wrath, like with this blue-white deck, like I don't, because every single creature I've played has basically drawn me a card and done something else, like by the time you're going to Wrath. So you've got to control it in different ways. You've got to, and like that, in that case, your plan would typically try and be keep me from getting stuff on the board. So you would be controlling the hand and counter spells. But then I play Teferi and you can't counter anything I play. So now your whole control plan is screwed. So Teferi might be the control killer in a way.
Yeah, and again, I think we touched on this a while ago about efficient answers. And even if it's efficient one-for-one answers, we need to see more cheap interaction, whether it's things like, Terminate-style effects in Standard and Dreadborn and that kind of thing. You need cheap two-mana answers to deal with these things to give the control decks some play. And honestly, like, what would really make control good? If there was a two-mana counter-target creature or planeswalker, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, remove soul plus, I don't know, yeah. Counter-target planeswalker.
Yeah,
spliced into one for two-mana. Because that's really, like, these decks and the power level of these threats, it's really difficult. And if you miss a counter-spell on one key turn and the opponent sneaks in something, often it makes it very difficult to catch up with. So, you know, it's often better to be proactive and be the one presenting the threat than trying to deal with it, as you say, because unless you have a very defined metagame, it's quite difficult to know how to build your said control deck.
This is 100% my thinking in my deck selection this time around, because, and you've always said that, you know, be more proactive. And I used to be more of that, like, and actually, to be honest, that's the thing. When I do well, it's usually when I'm playing more proactive decks. But I've been trying to play more control-y, more reactive stuff over the last year or so. And it hasn't been, well, not last year, but last couple months, I would say. And it hasn't been going as well for me as I would like, you know. And I've been frustrated by that. But then the second I start playing a deck where it's just put some threats on the board, gain some card advantage, and, you know, do the things, I win and I have fun. And it's like, I guess that is just Magic these days. Just play threats and, you know, try and play your threats in the correct order and try and outplay your opponent's threats, because your threats can probably deal with their threats. Your answers can't. Like, stuff like Deputy of Detention is, of course, it's got its drawbacks 100%, especially in a format where everything has a comes into play ability. You don't necessarily want to be using it on everything. But that's also just, you know, a silly card, because it's a 1/3 creature that removes a planeswalker. Like,
yeah.
For 3 mana. Or I could take out 3 of your runaway steam kids, which is something that's happened recently. Like, that's just devastating. Like, because I also know the mono red deck doesn't have in the main deck a 3-mana, 3-damage spell. Like, I know the most it can deal is 2 damage if it's going to try. So I just don't block with the Deputy of Detention, and I've got your 3 creatures for the rest of the game. So, yeah, the creatures have definitely gotten a little bit better these days.
Yeah, and I guess that's, you know, it's a new, and I guess, again, speaking to an earlier point, that's, it's part of what we love about the game, right? It's an evolution. And I guess it would be stale if things just remained the same. So
I guess
the challenge is now to how to thrive in this world, you know, in this new world where things are different.
In a lot of ways, things are different at the moment. Like this new world where things are different. You're speaking on two levels there.
Yeah. Also, the world where you can't leave the house. You know, that's also an interesting.
Do you see yourself picking up a bit more magic now to deal with this quarantine, Tom?
So I wasn't planning on. I mean, I just wasn't planning to. I a bit down with things and not motivated to play. However, I got a message last night, or was it this morning? I think it was this morning from Savesh. And Savesh is like, says, hey, Modern Horizons draft will be on MTGO tonight. And I don't know. I love the format. I loved Modern Horizons draft. So, and I did really well at it.
That was. I know you cleaned up. You were saying like you did so well in that format.
And Modern, just another thing is Modern Horizons cards on MTGO are generally really, really expensive. So, you know, if you're a competent drafter and you've got some time, I suggest heading to MTGO and, you know, trying your hand at some Modern Horizons. So, yeah.
Actually, do you want to give a quick, like off the top of your head, breakdown of some archetypes that so tonight you're going to open up Modern Horizons draft. What are you looking to do just off the top of your head?
Play blue-black ninjas, mostly. was it ninjas? Yeah, it's ninjas. Ninjas, like ninjas and fairies. Broken tempo archetype of format. I mean, there's a couple.
I love how you hate pauper, and like that's one of the like dopest decks in pauper.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, it's different when you're drafting a deck and you're putting it together, right? It takes the work that you put in, or I put in at the time, when you get to understand a format and figure out that a one mana, 1/1, unblockable, can't be blocked, is, you know, one of the best things you could possibly pick in the format. That's, you know, that's something special about that. You know, you figure those kind of things out. So just a great tempo deck with some card advantage, bounce, a little bit of removal and tons of evasion. So really, really fun deck. Red black aggro with a bit of a sacrifice theme. Also pretty good. The snow decks were great, blue green based snow. And there were variations of it. There were mill based decks. There were good stuff based snow decks with just powerful payoffs. Those are the ones that really I remember performing the best for me. I mean, I had a spreadsheet with all my records and my 3-0 drafts and everything in it, which I think I recently deleted, funny enough. But I'll have to double check if I still have it somewhere. But yeah, it's I don't know why, but it's just one of those formats that I really loved, and I thought it was very interesting, a very deep format.
Okay, that's cool. So I've been thinking, like, maybe we might need to start playing a bit more Magic, you know, since the economy is on a downturn, and we might need to start doing a few more of these podcasts, start a little Patreon account, and, you know, maximize those revenue streams. Maybe start streaming a little bit, because, yeah, who knows how long this quarantine stuff's actually going to last, and just what the long-term effect. So how would you feel about pivoting creator?
No, that's not for me. I'm too old, man, and I don't think I'll make enough money.
What about MTG coach? Like, you think you could do it that way?
I could help some people, but like, there's lots of great people out there doing that kind of work, and that I would recommend as well.
So you would give up like your sales to basically just recommend someone else?
No, I mean, I definitely can add value if people want, want that kind of help and want to get better at it, but not as something, not as something full time, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you don't see yourself becoming the next Ninja or PewDiePie.
No, not at all, not at all. Again, I've got so much going on, like on the business side of things and career side of things, that I need to get right. It's just a different stage of life,
Yeah, definitely. That is the thing. As you get older, it does become harder to play a card game, you know? Like, I would never call it a children's card game, but like, or to at least focus on it as a, because like playing games, for fun. That's the thing. I've been playing a lot of Skyrim. I've been playing a lot of silly little games and stuff like that. But cool. I think that's gonna bring us to the end. Today, a bit of a shorter one, but we don't have a guest today. We don't really know that much about what's currently happening in Magic, other than our brief interactions with the community online, and then also what we've been doing lately. We've been playing lately, but I hope you enjoy the Modern Horizons drafting. I'm a little jealous. I'm not going to join you there. I just can't be spending money on drafts at the moment. Like, that's not the kind of thing I can be doing. But I'm definitely going to have fun with this EGG 7 tournament if I keep winning.
Yeah, caveat if you keep winning. Yeah, well, look, I mean, who knows? Maybe we can stream one or two of these drafts, and yeah, maybe show the people what's up, and which one, why I like it so much,
Well,
So, yeah.
what is your Twitch handle there, if anyone actually does want to see you on Twitch?
Dude, I don't know. I haven't used. I think I've streamed like a handful of times over the years, but it's probably my name. It's probably Kiran or Kiran
Okay, well,
C or.
they can follow you on Twitter if they want to find that link, because I guess you'll put it out there before, you go live.
Oh yeah, I'll probably. Oh, it's Kiran C, KERANC. That's it.
Cool. So if you're listening to this and you want to watch Karan do some drafts, follow him on Twitch and hit him up on Twitter, harass him a little bit, tell him that you really, really want to watch him draft. And if you don't do that, then I guess he'll know that you don't want to do that, and then he doesn't have to. So this is like win-win all around.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm definitely keen to do a few more of these more often now, especially since so many of us are stuck at home and begging for content. If you are looking for more content, you can follow me on Twitter at BomnessMonster. I've also got another podcast called the Almost Perfect Podcast, where I interview creative South Africans of various ilks all across the spectrum. And yeah, we did a cool live interview on YouTube the other day. So just go check Almost underscore podcast on Twitter and the Almost Perfect Podcast everywhere else. And yeah, that brings us to the end. Thank you so much for listening to us. You can find us on Twitter at the Sharks MTG Podcast and whatever app you're on, and please leave a review if you are on, which one is it? Apple. Yes, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much, and enjoy those Magic games.